Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
This just into our newsroom, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center.
In the night.
Apparently that was another plane.
Seems to say.
An airplane has crashed into the World Trade Center.
All is lost.
There appears to be a gaping hole.
Gone away.
Oh, there it goes, there it goes, there it goes, there it goes.
But I know.
The whole site has collapsed.
The whole building has collapsed.
Not alone.
Tower 2 has had a major explosion and a complete collapse.
By the light.
The roof has collapsed in one of the towers.
She stands.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
There she waits.
We're not going to be cowered by it, that we're not afraid.
Faithful friend.
The freedom-loving nations of the world stand by our side.
Shimmering stars.
Proud to have the red, white, and blue.
Westward wind.
This country will not relent.
Show the way.
Proud to be a part of this country.
Carry me.
I think about the families, the children.
To the place.
Freedom itself was attacked, and freedom will be defended.
She stands.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you.
Just when you think it might be over.
Come on!
Just when you think the fight is gone. Someone will risk his life to raise
you. The resolve of our great nation is being tested.
Forget the 2,800 people.
Police and fire not only were heroes at the beginning, but they're still heroes.
Minds us with red.
We're going to come out of this emotionally stronger.
Those that die.
And the commitment of our fathers is now the calling of our time.
Watch to
watch. I don't think anybody should forget the visuals of that day.
By the brave.
Those guys did more than anyone ever expected of them.
In this tree.
They messed with the wrong city. They messed with the wrong state.
She stands.
And I just don't want people to forget.
When evil calls itself a modern.
They all had a sense of duty to protect us all.
When all your hopes come crashing down.
We'll be steadfast in our determination.
Someone will pull us from the rubble.
The rest of the country now understand who the true defenders are.
Hills caress you. May her lakes and rivers bless you.
We see the flying sword and tatter.
May the luck of the Irish enfold you.
We've seen her stand the test of time.
May the blessings of St. Patrick behold you.
And through it all the fools have fallen.
God bless Ireland and God bless the United States of America.
There she stands.
Now America's embracing a new ethic. And a new creed. Let's roll.
The phrase New York's finest and New York's bravest means something now, doesn't it?
This is a time to reflect and be thankful for where we are today.
And through the fight,
we will rebuild New York City.
She stands.
Yet after America was attacked, it was as if our entire country looked into a mirror and saw our better selves.
That was 17 years ago. I can't even believe how long it has been. Michael W. Smith, the story behind that song, and obviously we added a lot of the audio to it, and we have other songs we'll be playing throughout the day today, is that at some point after the attack that happened here in New York City, George W. Bush said to Michael W., you got to write a song. The video to it, we'll put it up on our website, Hannity.com. I mean, if you watch this video and hear this song and you don't cry, you don't have a heart. You don't have a soul. Anyway, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free number. You want to be a part of the program. Later on, Bernie Kerik, we'll go back. We'll remember 17 years ago. Then we'll go back and remember 6 years ago. It was also 9-11-2012 when, of course, there was the attack in Benghazi and the stand down orders and the people. It's how fascinating that Barack Obama this past Friday called it a conspiracy theory about Benghazi.
Can I add something? Do you mind? You know, I never interrupt your monologue, so it's worthy.
Go ahead, Linda. It's the Linda McLaughlin Show.
No, I just wanted to, I was talking to someone the other day. I had never heard this. Yeah. As someone who lived here on 9/11, was trapped in a building on 9/11 myself. And I was talking to this guy who went down and volunteered on 9/11.
Yeah.
And he was there. He was about 3 feet from the president when he came and gave that iconic
speech.
When
he stood on the rubble with the bullhorn?
100%. And was like, you know, giving
the speech.
And
soon the rest of the world will hear from us.
And the interesting thing that he said to me, which I was like in shock, he's like, no one could hear him because even though he was on the bullhorn, we were kind of behind him.
Right.
And everyone on the job site, as they were calling it, was whispering in case they heard signs of life.
Right.
So there was this weirdness when everyone, like the president comes on the, you know, the scene of this horrible terror attack.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think there'd be applause or cheering or, and it was silence.
The firemen, the elderly gentleman next to then President Bush, I've run into many times. He's a wonderful man. And, you know, it's an amazing thing to go back and think that we lived through this. And one of the things that always comes to mind, it's like you just can't believe it. One tower's hit. Another tower's hit. The Pentagon's hit. I mean, think of it this way. My daughter just turned 17 years old. She was born August 29th, 2001. And I ask her sometimes, do you know what happened, you know, just a couple of weeks after you were born? She knows what happened, but she didn't live it. And it's amazing.
But how scared were you? It's like you're bringing your baby girl into this world and this happens like, what,
you know,
10 days later?
I wasn't afraid. I knew America had strength. It was chilling to watch. It's something that I've always known that evil exists. My dad had fought in World War II after Pearl Harbor. I knew about his life experience, 4 years in the Pacific. And we all know, I've learned enough history about fascism, Nazism, communism. We know what happened, Imperial Japan and that unprovoked attack, day that will live in infamy. And 9/11 was the worst attack in history. We're living here. And, you know, my son is in college now. I literally dropped him off at nursery school. Just dropped him off. Then I got a call. Gomez calls me. Hannity, Gomez, are you watching this? I'm like, what? I run home, race to the TV. And, you know, at that point, he just stuns. Just stunning. One thing after another. Now, this is often the methodology of these terrorists. And our world's changed a lot from then. We forget, you know, I know we go through airports and we get patted down and we get wanded, especially if you travel with sweet baby James, you get wanded more than usual because he has a big sign on his back that says, wand me and everybody with me. He's the only one that gets wanded every single time now that he has artificial.
I think I've been added to that list, unfortunately.
Well, now he has a fake hip. He can beep, 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 beep,
oh,
beep,
gosh,
beep,
yeah,
beep,
this,
beep,
this
beep,
last
beep,
Russia
beep,
summit,
beep, beep,
oh,
beep,
disaster.
Yeah, but that never used to be the case. I remember how that day we were able to get on the air on radio. I mean, we couldn't get into the city. Nobody could enter New York City. And so Phil Boyce was our program director at the time over at the ex-wife, our other station once that was once good station. And anyway, so we're over there. I'm just teasing. I have friends there. But honestly, we got up. I went to WLIR in Garden City, Long Island. It's since changed call letters a number of times. But it was a big station over at the time when I was growing up as a kid. It was an alternative rock station. And we went there, and I'm sitting in one studio. I think WLTW, which is Light Music in New York, they're in that studio. Opie and Anthony are in that studio. They were on NAW at the time. And then that station was doing their own broadcasting, and you got wires literally all up and down the hall. And somehow, magically, they were able to get everybody up on the air. And we were able to broadcast that day because I couldn't get into the city. I lived down on Long Island. And by the way, this is a very competitive business, but not that day. Everyone was all hands on deck. And the thing that stands out in my mind and what I remember the most, it was one shock after another then the field in Pennsylvania, then the Pentagon. I remember when I was broadcasting, it was during the broadcast, I had gotten a call from somebody. I don't think we were taking commercials that day. And I remember somebody said Barbara Olson was on the flight that hit the Pentagon. And that's Ted Olson's wife, former Solicitor General, great guy. Barbara Olson had been a regular. She wrote about Hillary Clinton, Hell to Pay, I think was the name of her book. I still have it. She had Hillary's thesis from college, I remember. And but more importantly is all of these families to this. This is a hard day for a lot of people. You know, there are kids that have grown up having never seen their mothers and fathers because they died that day. And a lot of the people that died were firemen. And a lot of them were policemen. And a lot of them were transit police people. And other paramedics and first responders. And the most amazing thing that happens is while everybody is trying to get out of what is a horrific situation, those guys are going up in the other direction. And even for a city like New York, which can be pretty cold, I mean, it's kind of a true image. I mean, Linda's walking through this. Come on, can you walk faster? Let's go. Hurry up.
Can we talk about my finer points today and not that? Thank you.
Okay, but the point is New York came together. Because New York is a very impatient place at times, with impatient walkers on the streets.
I am not alone.
Okay. But out of nowhere, all these, you know, people started popping up tents and feeding all the first responders. Everywhere. All around where the rubble was. Campbell's Soup. I'll never forget Campbell's Soup. But they weren't charging anybody. Restaurants open. They didn't charge anybody. And, you know, volunteers going down to the extent that they could allow people in. And I think we have a lot of lessons to learn from this. We had let our guard down. They were at war with us. We had forgotten the Khobar Towers, the embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania. We forgot the USS Cole, the first Trade Center bombing. All that had happened. And we didn't do anything about it. And those enemies still exist out there. And that's a danger to every good man, woman, and child on this earth. There is evil that wants to destroy us. You only need read the history of Stalin and Russia and fascism and Hitler and Germany. That is pure, unadulterated evil. You open any newspaper on any given day, you read about murder and rape and horrific things that are done, man's inhumanity to man. And on the other side of that, in the midst of such evil, you get the other side of the human experience. Just pure generosity, goodness, courage on a level that you'd never see before. And that's what I remember. All those people that went up in the other direction and never went home that night. Pretty unbelievable. We better never forget, because it could happen again. We better keep our guard up.
Do you have opinions that you feel you can't express? I think we all do. Are you looking for a place to stir up conversation and let your opinions be heard? I want to introduce you to a new alternative social media site, Snippy.com. Snippy is an unbiased social media platform that's all about conversation and community. Snippy not only encourages freedom of expression, but guarantees its users the ability to discuss topics freely, without any suppression from administrators. Check in for a quick update about current events, or spend hours scrolling through users' posts. Write your thoughts and strike up conversation. Snippy's founders have intentionally created a forum where anyone can feel free to express their thoughts, frustrations, ideas, anything really. It's a place where discussion is valued. A place where your opinion matters. Totally free. Go to snippy.com now to express yourself. No shadow banning, no character limit, and no suppression of conservative thought ever. Check out the website at snippy.com or download the app. No censorship, no agenda. Join us at Snippy to get the discussion rolling.
You know, it is, I do love true human courage. And I know, like, when we go to movies, we like to see heroic figures. We really do. I know for whatever reason, and I'm not particularly somebody that likes Hollywood a whole lot, but, you know, all these action figure hero movies, I know a lot of them do very well in the box office and people like them, but there actually were real heroes that day, 17 years ago. You know, you think about this. Two planes hitting two towers, another plane hitting the Pentagon, a plane goes down in a field in Pennsylvania because a bunch of brave people said, let's roll. Those were all heroes. Every one of them. And we forget. But they remember. We remember them all today. Their courage. I don't even know what to say about this idiot Joe Scarborough, Liberal Joe, and Mika. You know, he really outdoes himself this morning. He actually writes a Washington Post column. It's not like he misspoke. Now I'm on the air. I fly without a net 4 hours a day, live radio, live television, every single day. But when you take the time to really write something, you have time to sculpt it, go over it, think about it. He just made a total ass out of himself, and he's trying to walk it back now. Mediaite has the story up that after receiving heavy criticism, he was asking whether President Trump had a more detrimental impact on America than 9/11. I mean, this is how sick and twisted and ugly and deranged that conspiracy network has become. I mean, it's 24/7 hating Trump. You can't put it aside for 5 seconds. Not even on 9/11/01. And it just, anyway, he has a title, a titled piece in the Washington Post. Trump is harming the dream of America more than any foreign adversary ever could. Is it even worth talking about this guy? No, it really isn't. Just pretty disgusting. It's really twisted. It's sick. You know, all the success that we're having, maybe you don't like the style of the president, the tweets of the president, things he says sometimes, the fights that he picks, but you can't deny it's working. That's one thing. And by the way, Joey Scarborough, a little meek, they used to love the president. Guess they don't like him now, so now they've gone all in. That's a Republican on conspiracy TV, MSNBC. Joe Bastardi joins us in a minute. The president now is at his desk at the White House in the Oval Office and talking about Hurricane Florence. A Cat 4 headed right for the Carolina coast and the eastern coast of the United States. Here's what he says.
Okay, thank you very much. I've received a briefing from Secretary Nielsen, Administrator Long, and my senior staff regarding Hurricane Florence and other tropical systems that will soon impact the United States and its territories. The safety of American people is my absolute highest priority. We are sparing no expense. We are totally prepared. We're ready. We're as ready as anybody's ever been. And it looks to me, and it looks to all of a lot of very talented people that do this for a living, like this is going to be a storm that's going to be a very large one, far larger than we've seen in perhaps decades. Things can change, but we doubt they will at this stage. It's pretty late stage. We doubt they're going to be very, very far off course. The places that are in the way and in the most jeopardy would be Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, that area. And again, they haven't seen anything like what's coming at us in 25, 30 years, maybe ever. It's tremendously big and tremendously wet. Tremendous amounts of water. So I've spoken with the governors of South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia. They're prepared. We're prepared. We're working very well in conjunction with the governors. I'd like to ask Brock Long, our administrator, has done so well for us in Texas and Florida. We have something, it could very well be very similar to Texas in the sense that it's tremendous amounts of water. Texas was the one that had, I would say to this point, Brock, probably more water than we've ever seen in a storm or a hurricane. And it went out for seconds and thirds. We've never seen anything like it. But FEMA, as you know, did a fantastic job, and a fantastic job also in Florida. And I'd like to ask Brock if you would to just say a few words to the media as to where it is now, what's going to be happening, and how well prepared we are.
Thank you, Mr. President. Unfortunately, Hurricane Florence is setting up to be a devastating event to the Carolinas and potentially Virginia as well. So, as you can see, they're forecasting a major landfalling storm, Category 3 or 4 storm at landfall. The biggest hazard that we're worried about is storm surge. That's the primary driver of the evacuations that are underway by the states of North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia right now. But as this system comes in and makes landfall during the weekend, it's forecast to stall stall out, lose its steering currents, and drop copious amounts of rainfall. Unfortunately, the remnants of Gordon passed through the Mid-Atlantic over the weekend and dropped a lot of rain, saturating rivers. So Hurricane Florence, as it comes in and puts anywhere between 20 and 30 inches more in isolated areas, could create a lot of inland flooding. So right now, sir, we're supporting the governors with achieving their life safety evacuation movements. We're focused on mass care and sheltering, and then we'll be focused on helping them to execute their response and recovery goals.
What are the chances that it veers off course and, you know, the hit won't be so direct? What are the chances of that?
Unfortunately, I believe there's quite a bit of certainty in the track forecast because the forward speed is picking up. It's getting faster, and when systems do that, the track forecast becomes a lot more accurate. I think the expectation needs to be set with the citizens in this area that if you've been asked to leave, get out of the areas that are going to flood and get into a facility that can withstand the winds. Let's set the expectations as well. This has an opportunity of being a very devastating storm. The power is going to be off for weeks. You're going to be displaced from your home in the coastal areas, and there will be flooding in the inland areas as well. So these are going to be statewide events. The hazards will be statewide.
Okay, you wanted to show us this one then?
Yeah, this is a 7-day rainfall graphic. As you can see, the pink areas and the purple areas indicate 20 inches. That's mean area rainfall. That's an average rainfall amount. But you may see isolated amounts greater into the 30-inch range over Virginia. The central portions of Virginia and West Virginia, and these impacts they're going to be through the Mid-Atlantic. So we're coordinating not only with South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, but other Mid-Atlantic states all the way to Delaware.
Good.
Yes, sir.
And it has been great coordination. I have to tell you, the states have been terrific. Everybody's working together. The governors and all of their representatives have been absolutely fantastic. And FEMA, there's nobody like your people. I mean, they what they're doing is incredible. Do you have any questions for Secretary Nielsen or for Brock Long, please?
What lesson do we take from what happened in Puerto Rico? How do we apply the lessons we took from Puerto Rico?
Well, I think Puerto Rico was incredibly successful. Puerto Rico was actually our toughest one of all because it's an island, so you can't truck things onto it. Everything's by boat. We moved a hospital into Puerto Rico, a tremendous military hospital in the form of a ship, you know that. And I actually think, and the governor's been very nice, and if you ask the governor, he'll tell you what a great job. I think probably the hardest one we had by far was Puerto Rico because of the island nature. And I actually think it was one of the best jobs that's ever been done with respect to what this is all about. Puerto Rico got hit not with one hurricane, but with two. And the problem with Puerto Rico is their electric grid and their electric generating plant was dead before the storms ever hit. It was in very bad shape. It was in bankruptcy, had no money. It was largely, you know, it was largely closed. And when the storm hit, they had no electricity essentially before the storm. And when the storm hit, that took it out entirely. The job that FEMA and law enforcement and everybody did working along with the governor in Puerto Rico, I think, was tremendous. I think that Puerto Rico was an incredible unsung success. Texas, we have been given A pluses for. Florida, we've been given A pluses for. I think in a certain way, the best job we did was Puerto Rico, but nobody would understand that. I mean, it's harder to understand. It was a very hard thing to do. Because of the fact they had no electric, before the storms hit, it was dead, as you probably know. So we've gotten a lot of receptivity, a lot of thanks for the job we've done in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is very important. And by the way, speaking of Puerto Rico, and they're going to be affected pretty much pretty soon by something else that's on its way. Is that right?
Potentially Hurricane Isaac right now is tracking south of the island, but we are we have several thousand people inside Puerto Rico right now working on long-term recovery that have shifted to the response mode to monitor as Isaac passes to the south.
We do not want to see Hurricane Isaac hit Puerto Rico. That's all we need. But we have a big hurricane out there, and it's sort of skirting along Puerto Rico and the edge of Puerto Rico. That would not be good.
Mr. President, how much money do you think you'll need for recovery efforts in this next hurricane, and do you have that?
Well, we have it currently. We're going to, obviously, these are all unanticipated, so we'll go to Congress. Congress will be very generous because we have no choice. This is the United States, and it's whether it's Texas or Florida or, frankly, if it's Virginia, because Virginia looks like it's very much in the path. Maryland, by the way, could be affected, very seriously affected, just to add. It's a little bit outside of the path. And then, of course, South Carolina and North Carolina. I think that any amounts of money, whatever it takes, we're going to do. But we're already set up. We have tremendous trucking systems. We have food systems. We have a lot of contractors waiting. But for the most part, it's been handled by FEMA. And also, we've coordinated locally. We have food for days. We have emergency equipment and generators for many days. We should be in great shape. Now, I've also heard it could be 21 and 22 inches. If you can imagine what that is, 22 inches of rain, it is not something that we've had. Certainly, we've never had this on the East Coast. So, but I think we're very well prepared, very well set up, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think this storm right here is very similar to Hurricane Hugo, and it's almost like a combination of Hurricane Hugo in 89 and Hurricane Floyd in 1999. But look, successful disaster response and recovery is one that's locally executed, state managed, and federally supported. So what FEMA is doing is pre-positioning the federal government's assets to support each one of those governors that are about to be impacted with achieving their response and recovery goals. And that's the way emergency management disaster response works best. I also think I'd like to point out that what we learned last year is that we have got to build a true culture of preparedness within our citizens here in America. This is a partnership, and it takes anything from neighbor helping neighbor all the way to the federal government when it comes to correctly responding and recovering.
Minister, can we ask you about preparations for power outages? What does FEMA like now?
Sure, great. That's a great question. So FEMA doesn't own the power grids in any one of these states. A lot of them are owned by the private industry. So what we have are business emergency operations center calls. We're concentrating with the private vendors to make sure that they have strong mutual aid programs in place, and we set up incident support bases to help stage power crews coming in from other states. And largely, it's FEMA's job to get out of the way to make sure that the private power companies can get into these areas to set up their grid. We don't own it. We don't own it.
But unlike Puerto Rico, you have very strong power companies. They're very powerful, very well managed in the sense that they have tremendous overcapacity. They are going to do a great job. They also have made contracts with other power companies that won't be affected, and they're going to be coming in. Just to answer your question, they'll be coming in to the various states that will be affected. They're going to be coming in very strongly, and they're already lining up. They'll be here probably for the most part tomorrow or shortly before the storm hits. So they're going to be in great shape. These are really states that have very, very strong power authorities.
What's your message, Mr. President, to people who might not have evacuated yet?
Well, that's very risky. I mean, again, we've never seen anything quite like this on the East Coast, at least. And if it turns out to be as bad, you know, we go out there. You have people that actually go fly through these storms. These are very brave people, but they fly through. And from what I'm hearing, the sights that they're seeing have not been seen on the East Coast before. So I would say everybody should get out. I mean, you have to listen to your local authorities. And whether you're upland or downland, but depending on where you are, you have to listen and you have to get out. If they want you to get out, because it's going to be impossible to have people get in there, whether it's law enforcement or FEMA or anybody else, once this thing hits, it's going to be really, really bad along the coast. Okay? Anything else?
Do you believe Rob Porter and Gary Cohn's denials today?
Well, you shouldn't be talking about that right now because it doesn't matter, but I really appreciate their statement. Their statement was excellent, and they both sent out beautiful.
All right, the president wrapping up now as we go to Joe Bastardi, weatherbell.com. Joe, you've been saying one thing that you said to me in a text message: this is the real thing, this is the real deal. It's going to the pattern, which was confirmed by the president's guy, the pattern is not going to shift. It's going right to the Carolinas and Virginia.
Well, yeah, I think that there's a
track,
shot,
rather.
Sean, that
the track. Well, you know, we've been further south. We've been in at Wilmington or Cape Fear, and then taking it sort of toward Asheville, not quite as much up toward Virginia. And I think that that still has validity. And I could, given the strength of this big upper ridge of high pressure that's going to be developing this weekend, I could see this track going almost straight westward through South Carolina into North Georgia. I'm actually a little bit more concerned about North Georgia and South Carolina than Virginia now, where landfall is at Cape Fear. I don't think we're going to vary that at all. And the question becomes, how fast does it come ashore? And if you see it, the best thing that can happen, and it's the best of the worst worlds, is that this comes and stops just offshore. The water upwells, and even though those beaches will be getting battered, it would weaken a bit just before it came inland. And if it just keeps coming and coming and coming, and if it's inland late Thursday night, Friday morning, you're going to see 140, 150 mile an hour winds where it makes landfall around Cape Fear. We do think that this is going to, at some time, crawl to an almost halt. And the question is, when and where is that halt going to be? Is it going to be on the South Carolina coast?
You said this yesterday, that it's a slower moving storm than Hugo, which went in and out and created massive damage. And in that sense, it makes it more deadly to you.
It makes it, if it comes in and then stalls, that's the worst case scenario, because it won't have time. A lot of times when these storms stall in these coastal waters, what will happen is they'll be upwelling. The water will cool, and they'll start to get a little bit weaker. The storm that hit in 1964 in Dora, for instance, stopped off St. Augustine for a while before it came in. So instead of going in at 140, it went in at 120. What we want to emphasize and what we've been saying at Weatherbell is we believe this is going to be a storm that very, very close and on top of Cape Fear late Thursday night and on into Friday morning. And then the track is more west into the southern part of the Carolina, southern North Carolina, South Carolina, rather than up. I'm not really impressed with the I'm not saying stop in Virginia. I'm certainly not telling you to, you know, oh, don't worry about it. What I'm saying is that when that storm gets to the coast, there is a rearrangement of the upper pattern, sort of a handoff from the Atlantic Ridge to the big ridge that's going to be over the Great Lakes, the blocking upper high, and that.
When is it going to hit? We got to run here. When do you think this makes landfall?
I think it hits midnight to 6 a.m. Friday morning at Cape Fear, North Carolina. That's when I think the center comes ashore.
All right. When does it really start hitting, though?
Well, I think hurricane force winds reach the North Carolina coast by noon, maybe 9 a.m. in the morning on Thursday. I think those areas are getting battered.
So by the time I come on the air Thursday night at 9, it's going to be in full swing.
Yeah, it's going to be rocking and rolling. I mean, it's just that storm is going to be
Joe Bastardi.
Impressive pictures.
Weatherbell.com for the very latest.
Americans do not yet have the distance of history, but our responsibility to history is already clear, to answer these attacks and rid the world of evil.
I hear people say, we don't need this war.
We protest this war, and it's not a war, actually it's a slaughter.
But I say there's some things worth fighting for.
We are very grateful and thankful that we live in a country where there's freedom of speech, that people who are either for or against a war can speak out.
What about our freedom?
Everything just went black.
And this piece of ground.
Everything came down.
We didn't get to keep them by backing down.
Glass are popping and people got hurt.
They say we don't realize the mess we're getting in.
Oh, there it goes, there it goes, there it goes.
Before you start your preaching, let me ask you this, my friend. Have you forgotten?
Oh, my God.
Oh.
The next building
is another
just
one.
Up. Oh, my God.
Another plane just flew in.
I feel a heat. The explosion is incredible.
Have you forgotten?
I saw this plane come out of nowhere and just cream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side.
There's been an act of war declared upon America by terrorists.
Have you forgotten?
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people who knocked these buildings down
say your prayers. I'm going to die.
Ma'am, say your prayers. And we're not going to die. We're gonna
it's
gonna
so hot. I'm burning up. Help!
Have you forgotten about our Pentagon?
Dozens of residents that are sitting on the hills behind the Pentagon, almost like they're waiting for the 4th of July fireworks, but instead they're staring dumbfounded at what looks like a war zone.
I mean, you see bodies flying out of the sky and you can't do nothing about it. You tell me. There's no words to describe what's going on out there.
Have you forgotten?
America is a nation full of good fortune, with so much to be grateful for, but we are not spared from suffering. In every generation, the world has produced enemies of human freedom. They have attacked America. Because we are freedom's home and defender.
Have you forgotten?
And the commitment of our fathers is now the calling of our time.
At this memorial on this sacred earth, in the field beyond this wall, and in the skies above our heads, we remember the moment when America fought back. We're also joined by members of the National Park Service, along with firefighters, first responders, and incredible people from law enforcement. These are truly great people. Some of you here today answered the call and raced to this field 17 years ago. You fill our hearts with pride, and I want to thank you on behalf of our country. Thank you very much.
All right, joining us now, he was the police commissioner on 9/11/2001 in New York City, showed incredible heroism and bravery. By the way, has a brand new book out. It's a novel, and it's called The Grave Above the Grave. And actually comes from really real life experiences as I've been reading it.
Some of them.
Yeah. Bernard Kerik is with us. What's up, Kamish? How are you?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
It's really good to see you. I think back 17 years ago, and it's unimaginable that all of that happened. You know, we played the song by Darryl Worley, Have You Forgotten? I think a lot of people sadly have forgotten. I think we get further away. You see this guy here 17 years later.
Yeah,
nothing has happened to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who is the mastermind of 9/11.
Still waiting for trial.
Still waiting for trial 17 years later. Why is he alive?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. Just walk us through that day, because you experienced something, the worst attack on American soil in our history. You know, it can add Pearl Harbor, the second worst, just as bad. Horrible death and destruction. And you nearly died in the process.
I did a couple times, actually. That morning, I was in my office when the first plane hit Tower 1. My chief of staff, John Picciano, came in and told me that a plane had hit the tower. I got to see the damage on TV and through one of my conference room windows. I called the mayor. I told him I'd meet him downtown at 7 World Trade, directly across the street from Tower 1. That's where our command center was.
That's where your command center was.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was going to meet him there.
Mm-hmm.
And jumped in the car, got down to West Broadway and Vesey, and we were stopped by the cops. A sergeant came up to my car and he said, "Commissioner, you can't pull onto the block. They're jumping." And I didn't know what he was talking about. And I got out of the vehicle.
That was one of the hardest things to watch.
I looked up at one. In that first few minutes, I watched probably 24 people jump to their death, and they were landing on Vesey. They were landing in the courtyard between the two buildings and pretty much disintegrating. And
well, for those that don't know, the reason they had to jump is that they had jet fuel and the fire, obviously, and they were right. Burning. They were being burnt a lot.
Well,
they were
done. You know what, Sean? It was probably 1500 to 2000 degrees in that area where they were. So they took what they thought was the best route to end it, really, because there was no living through it. We waited there on that corner. We backed up the vehicles. I told the mayor's detail to meet us on Barclay and West Broadway, and as I was waiting for him, the second aircraft slammed through the north side of the tower. So when you see that big orange fireball blow out the north side of Tower 2, me and my staff, Joe Loder, the deputy mayor, we were standing under it.
You had no doubt after the first plane, though, that this was terror.
After, you know what? At the first plane, it could be an accident. The damage looked too big. You know, they kept saying plane. I was thinking, how big, what kind of plane? What was
it? Yeah, nobody knew at the time. Was it a small, you know,
yeah, right.
You know, plane that people fly around?
But the damage was enormous. But when the second plane hit, I didn't actually see the plane. It came from the southern end of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And it blew out the north side of the building over top of us. But I could hear the aviation pilots, the helicopter pilots from the NYPD,
right,
yelling that a second aircraft had just hit Tower 2. And at that minute, that moment, I knew we were under attack.
When you think back to that day, and your job at that moment is to lead your guys, and that includes FDNY. I mean, the fire department, they lost a ton of people.
Right.
A lot of first responders lost their life. And I think the most amazing thing to me in that day is everybody else that's in the World Trade Center, that rightly they're racing down to get out of the building. But in the other direction, there's a group of other people.
You know what, Sean? And this is, I think this is what people just can't grasp because of the magnitude of the attack. New York City first responders, the fire department, the police department, and Port Authority Police effected the greatest rescue mission in the history of this country. They took 20 to 25,000 people out of those buildings in the immediate area, and they evacuated more than a million people into the four boroughs and into New Jersey under Rudy Giuliani's leadership.
It was a little over an hour before the towers came down, right?
Right.
So you didn't have a lot of time. But we remember the videos, people walking over bridges and...
No, exactly. Hey, Sean, you know what? When the first tower imploded, the mayor and I, as you know, we were actually trapped inside 75 Barclay.
One block away.
A block away, block north. He was on the phone with the White House trying to get the president, and somebody came on the line, and I remember he hung up the phone. He looked at me, he said, "This isn't good." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Somebody just told me that they think the Pentagon got hit. They're evacuating the White House," and they hung up on me. Mm-hmm. And I was, and before I could get my head around what he just said,
the first tower came down.
The first tower came down, and it felt like, you know, a freight train was coming through the side of the building we were in. And yeah, then
within seconds, you can't see a thing.
You couldn't see nothing. You know, I can look back and laugh now, but at the time, I actually thought, I said, you know, all the stuff I've been through in my life, gun battles, shootouts, partner shot, part friends killed in line of duty and all this stuff. All that stuff, but I'm going to suffocate in this office because there was no way out. I couldn't breathe. And we were actually trapped in there for about 20, 25 minutes. And then we got these maintenance guys to open up some doors under, you know, in the basement of the building, and went out onto Church Street. And I remember getting into the 100 Church, walking through a vestibule door, and there was no sound.
It's unbelievable.
There was no sound. It was deathly silent.
Let's talk about those guys. How many first responders, police, firemen, Port Authority cops, you know,
I lost,
other guys?
I lost 23 that worked for me. The Port Authority Police lost 37. But the New York City Fire Department. Lost 343. You know, and the mayor and I, when we got trapped, we actually walked up Church Street to Houston to the firehouse. That house was locked down. It was complete. There wasn't no one in it. They all left.
That to me is the story. I got to take a break. We'll come back. Bernie Kerik remains with us, former NYPD commissioner. He was there. He put his life on the line on 9/11, nearly lost it. He also has his new book out, The Grave Above the Grave. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. Hey, listen, I talk about Simply Safe Home Security a lot on this show, and they offer the best protection for your home and your family. And I've known these guys a long time, and there are only five guys that were working for the company when I got to know them. Well, guess what? Now there's almost 1,000, and they protect millions of us as Americans. They protect our homes and family, and it's the latest, greatest, best technology. CNET, PC Magazine, Wirecutter, all named Simply Safe Home Security, their top pick. And here's a lot of reasons why. It is wireless. There's no installation, no contract to sign, no expensive monthly rates. You get 24-hour protection 7 days a week, professional monitoring, police dispatch. You get protection against intruders, fires, leaks, busted pipes. They even work during power outages and down Wi-Fi, even if a burglar smashes your keypad. It's incredible to use, and right now you'll get a 10% discount just by going to simplysavehannity.com, and it's only $14.99 a month. That's simplysavehannity.com, simplysavehannity.com.
America will never Forget. Forget. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
As we continue with Bernie Kerik, former New York City police commissioner on 9/11, as we remember all that happened that day, 2001, is a book out. It's called The Grave Above the Grave, chilling reminder of what we're up against. You know, you have in the midst of evil, because there's only one way to describe this as evil. And then you have your guys, what you train for, and everybody's going one way to get the hell out of there, and you guys are going in the opposite direction. I have to believe that those firemen and policemen knew that there was a good chance they were going to their death that day. They had
John,
to.
Listen.
They're smart people.
They ran from the scene when the stuff fell.
Right.
And after everything settled, after Building 2 imploded, they went back to Tower 1. They went back into the building. They went back to the surrounding area to start re-evacuating. You know, there is courage like that is not easy to come by. And they knew the perils inherent with what they were doing.
It's amazing. I have a lot of friends of mine in law enforcement and on the fire department. I give them such hell. I'm a horrible friend. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You get 24 hours on. In the 24 hours, you get to cook these great meals. You get rack time. They get to sleep sometimes. Not a lot.
But you know what? When they're needed?
The one day.
It was one day.
And then the one fire, one day, and their life could be over.
That's right. It happens.
It happens more often than it should.
That's exactly right.
It is. And then, you know, there was a pretty amazing moment, too, because all these stores started opening up and just feeding all the first responders.
Listen, there was no cash changing hands.
People just stepped up.
If there's one thing that bothers me about what we're going through today, you know, the political attacks, the persecution of the president, this polarization in Washington. On September 11th, this was one country, completely one country. And we had cops that drove and firemen that drove from California down to Ground Zero.
Amazing,
over
right?
a 3 or 4 day period.
To help.
And I remember going down there at night and stopping these guys from Oakland, California. And I said, what are you doing here? Like, how'd you get here? There's no flights.
Yeah.
He said, well, my man here has got a pickup, and this guy had a car, and we jumped in. We just got on Route 80, headed east until we saw the smoke.
One thing I remembered is Campbell's soup. I mean, it may not sound like a big deal. I eat Campbell's soup all the time, chicken noodle. They set up a soup tent for everybody.
That's right.
And they fed them for weeks and weeks and weeks.
And the food came from everywhere. Yeah,
everywhere.
Everywhere.
You know, it just is a reminder that evil does exist, and the United States, to me, must remain the strong force for good. I always say, Bernie, that there's never been a country in the history of man that has accumulated more power, not only abused it less, but advanced the human condition for good. Not that we're perfect. And we saw the worst day that we could imagine. And then we saw the best in humanity by people like yourself and the mayor and all of those firemen and policemen, Port Authority cops and paramedics that all went there. It blows me away. And those families never got to see their families again. It's sad.
It is. It is.
And all those people killed.
I think there's a term, you know, this term, never forget.
Yeah.
Never forget.
Never.
And never forgive. You cannot forgive the people that did this. You can't forget what their mindset is, what their ideology is, what they want. They want the demise of Israel. They want the demise of this country. They strongly believe that if you don't worship the same God they do, the same way they do, they have a right to kill you. And personally, me, I'd rather be on the opposite end. I think we should kill them first before they kill us.
It's interesting. Your new book is out, The Grave Above the Grave. And it is about another attack on American soil from a network of radical Islamic terrorism. So it's really ripped from the headlines. You were a hero then and you are today. And I know the course of what you've done, you save lives. You're also a dear friend of mine. Thank you for what you did that day.
We'll never forget.
And everybody else and to all the families that lost loved ones, we're thinking about them today. and they're in our prayers. It's unimaginable. These kids grew up without parents after this. And
you know what, Sean? Just on a personal note, thank you for what you do. Because without your support, without people like you supporting the first responders, you know,
this is why I hate taking on the FBI every day. I don't like doing it.
We live in a time right now where there's so much anti-government, anti-comp sentiment, anti-military sentiment by the left. They need all the support they can get.
You were a hero that day. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bernie Kerik. The book is called The Grave Above the Grave. We'll put it up on Hannity.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue.
Over the past few decades, the politics of division and resentment and paranoia has unfortunately found a home in the Republican Party. This Congress has championed the unwinding of campaign finance laws to give billionaires outside influence over our politics, embraced wild conspiracy theories like those surrounding Benghazi.
One more thing, if I may. This year, a representative of the House referred to our loss as just another incident. This year, a network commentator said the president's performance in Helsinki was a traitorous act, as was 9/11. And last week, a senator attacked a Supreme Court nominee and called him a racist for alleged comments after 9/11. Stop. Stop. Please, stop using the bones and ashes of our loved ones as props in your political theater. Their lives, sacrifices, and death are worth so much more. Let's not trivialize them or us. It hurts. To my mom and to all of you and your loved ones, never forget.
You know, here it is, 9/11, 2018. We had 9/11, 2001. We had Bernie Kerik on the program earlier. Then, of course, we know what happened on 9/11, 2012. And if you go back and you think about it, well, that's when Benghazi happened. And there you have Barack Obama claiming, oh, this is a conspiracy theory. Well, we know it wasn't a conspiracy theory because the people that were there on the ground that others asked to sign non-disclosure agreements, they've told a very, very different story. By the way, we have two heroes that we're talking to today. Sean Parnell is with us, by the way, a Purple Heart recipient. He's got a novel out, by the way. It's amazing. Man of War and New York Times bestselling author. And also Chris Tantoparanto, who I don't really like in real life. He's not a nice person. He's a horrible human being.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate that. I'm gonna hang up now.
By the way, now we've actually become good friends and we can do that. By the way, is that story true that your Twitter account was suspended? What's up with that?
Twice in about 48 hours.
Well, what did you do?
There was a liberal group that was Rob O'Neill tweeted something, and I don't troll. Actually, people send these things to me.
Well, Rob O'Neill's the guy that shot Bin Laden.
Yeah. They said Rob O'Neill during Obama's speech, he couldn't, you know, he said he could say Nazism, neo-Nazism over and over, and Rob said, well, yeah, but neo-Nazi, but you still can't say radical Islam. And then this leftist group chimed in. Well, he did kill Osama bin Laden to Rob. And obviously this group did not know who Rob was. And when I read it, I was like, oh, my God. And I just busted up laughing. So I mocked him. I said, did you just tell the guy that shot Osama bin Laden that Barack Hussein Obama killed bin Laden? And I just laughed. And I did say my normal Tonto Ranger self.
President said on Friday the politics of division and paranoia has found a home in the Republican Party, and they've embraced wild conspiracy theories like those surrounding Benghazi. Well, you were there on September 11th, 2012, and we lost lives that day. Yeah. And you were given a stand down order because I've interviewed you enough that you told me. And all of this happened. And then you end up in Germany. And for the first time, you turn on the TV and you hear people lying about what had happened there.
Yeah, you know, at that point in time, it was sickening, but I turned it off. And I don't think people realize it. They say, well, you just wanted to make a book. You just wanted to. No, actually, I went back and served in Yemen for 8 more months. I went and actually took, you know, my 2-month break, and I went and served again because I figured at that time, and I wasn't into politics, hey, the powers that be will get this figured out. I trust them. They're my leaders. How wrong I could be, and how I started to see that there was a deep state definitely involved. And over this last 6 years, they still are trying to rewrite history of Benghazi. And that is a slap in the face, not to just the family members, but I'll even say to myself, the guys that fought. And I watched Tyrone and Glenn die. I was shooting over their heads. They didn't die, you know, and just by being on the ground with me. I was shooting over their heads when they were hit with mortars. I saw those mortars hit. And so do you just call it a conspiracy theory and try to rewrite history when I watched them die? And then I helped get their bodies to the airfield, and I also ID'd the ambassador's body who died that night as well. You know, it really offends me, and of course I'm going to get angry.
It was the ambassador Stevens that who had requested numerous times additional security, and it was never forthcoming. That was Hillary Clinton's State Department, and here you are at an annex about a mile away. You know what's going on. You know this is a terror attack, and that's why this whole story, you want to talk about a conspiracy theory, and Susan Rice going on five Sunday shows and telling the American people an outright lie.
But based on the best information we have to date, what our assessment is as of the present is, in fact, what it began spontaneously in Benghazi as a reaction to what had transpired some hours earlier in Cairo, where, of course, as you know, there was a violent protest outside of our embassy sparked by this hateful video. But soon after that spontaneous protest began outside of our consulate in Benghazi, we believe that it looks like extremist elements, individuals joined in that effort with heavy weapons of the sort that are unfortunately readily now available in Libya post-revolution, and that it spun from there into something much, much more violent.
That this was a spontaneous demonstration. It wasn't spontaneous. People don't show up at demonstrations with grenade launchers in their back pocket like they did in this particular case.
Exactly.
Let me bring Sean Parnell
in. Hey, Chris, it's great to finally get a chance to meet you on the great Sean Hannity's radio show. It's pretty amazing. And
you too, bro. You know, thanks for your service. I admire you. You're a hero, my friend.
And likewise, man.
Never met, but
well, by the way, for those that don't know, and I think it's important, I was going to bring this up. Sean Parnell's Army unit served in Afghanistan, was the subject of the book, a national bestseller called Outlaw Platoon. And it was 9/11/2001 that inspired you to join the Army to defend this country. And you had, 485-day deployment, 2006 and 7.
Yep.
Only a single member of your platoon was killed. And since returning home, three members of the platoon have taken their own lives. And there's some 250,000+ men because we over-deployed them all.
Right, correct.
And PTSD is real. And these guys are struggling to this day.
Well, I mean, that is why I part of the reason why I made the jump into fiction with Man of War, because, and by the way, I have to say it's surreal to see Man of War on the shelves, on the fiction shelves right next to Bob Woodward's book. But I will say that's the reason why I wrote that book, a mainstream fiction story, who Eric Steele is my hero. But he embodies the greatness of the warrior ethos that Chris, you and I, aspired to hold true to when we were in the military. He embodies everything that is great about the American character. And, you know, after September 11th, the most horrific terrorist attack in our nation's history, I mean, what really stuck with me that day was how the first responders responded to it, police officers, firefighters, just ordinary American citizens who on that day, in my eyes, became extraordinary because instead of running away from the flames that day, they ran headlong into them. And many of the people that went into the flames that day never escaped again with their lives. And I just feel like, you know, that inspired me to serve my country, serve something greater than myself and take the fight to the enemy for a year and a half. But it also inspired me to write a great, to me, a fiction book, with a mainstream fiction book, with a character that actually loves this country, because I don't feel like there's enough of that in our culture today.
Well, I agree with that. And, you know, look, I don't, in retrospect, I'm not willing to send guys to war anymore if we're not going to fight to win the war.
Look, we have, you're exactly right.
Not willing.
Look, we have a moral responsibility in this country that when we send soldiers to war,
win it.
Because otherwise you have guys coming home and question what it was for in the first place for decades.
How many are back here with no legs, no arms, with their faces disfigured for the rest of their lives?
Thousands.
Tens
of thousands.
And then others never came home, or they came home in pieces in a box with an American flag draped over it. We ask people to step up and fight for their country. And then we don't back them, and we politicize our wars, and then we pull out, and we don't finish the job.
It's maddening because here we are in Afghanistan, the longest war in American history, 17 plus years. We win every battle on the ground, but somehow, in my eyes, we're losing the war because we have the wrong strategy, because we've let our politicians take over the war as opposed to letting.
What do you think happened? 58,000 kids died in Vietnam. 58,000. Then the war becomes politicized, and what do? We pulled out.
Yeah, and honestly, that the same thing that it's the same tragedy that happened with Chris, right? You know, you have politicians involved where they shouldn't be. In the case of President Obama, he violated a sacred trust. If your boys are under attack and they are being shot at and they are being overwhelmed, you send in the cavalry. And not only did President Obama, by the way, the commander in chief, the first title, he's a commander, a duty and obligation and responsibility to the men and women in uniform to be there for him when they need it most. And in your most dire moment, Chris, he was not there. And not only that, he lied about it.
How did the personnel react to being told to stand down? They were furious. So the military is told to stand down, not engage in the fight. These are the kind of people willing to engage. What did, where'd that message come down? Where'd the stand down order come from? I believe it came from either AFRICOM or SOC Africa.
So how many times did you guys attempt to go help out Ambassador Stevens in this compound that was under enemy attack?
Officially, there was three. There was actually two waits and a stand down. So if you want to say officially, but for 30 minutes, we were trying to get out the gate. But if you want to say an actual, hey, we need to go to our leadership, our chief and our team leader. No, you're not going. Wait. All right, we'll wait. There was actually three different specific times. Two were the waits to me. Tick got the stand down. And then we finally just said, you know, to hell with it. We're going, guys. This is when you hear your buddy, and I know Sean's heard this before as well, that radio call, and it doesn't even to be even any expletives. It's just the voice that just put that chills up your spine. And when Alec, the State Department officer who had barricaded himself in the tactical operations center at the consulate, said, GRS, which was us, you know, we are global responsive. He said, GRS, if you don't get here, we're all going to F and die. The whole team's like, to hell with this. We're going. Now, and we knew that if any of us died over there, because we're contractors, we would get no insurance, life insurance. If we
it's
got
unbelievable.
Injured, we get no health insurance because we would be disobeying.
But you still, orders. But but you knew your fellow Americans were under fire.
Yeah.
You knew that they needed help. You had the ability to help them. You're a mile away. You're the first. You're the only line of defense they have. Ultimately, you ended up saving dozens of lives in the process.
Yeah, we did.
People that otherwise would have died. You lost people very close to you in that firefight that took the same risk that you did. And then you get to Germany after you've flown out of there. And the next thing you hear is your government lying to you about the whole incident. They made it up.
And still, all of us had to have some fortitude to put that aside, at least initially. But you can only call SEALs and Rangers and Marines liars for so long before we finally just have had it, which is about 8 months. I'll give you that. That's how long it is. It's 8 months. But we still had the test of fortitude to put that aside and still trust our leadership, even though deep down inside, because I've been deploying. At that point, I've been deploying for 10 years. 10 years I've been deploying Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and then also Yemen. But we still had the intense fortitude to put that aside. So, you know what? They're going to get this right. This is America. They're still our leaders. No matter who's in office, they still have our backs, and they're going to get this figured out.
Well, that's the problem. They're not showing that we have their backs. All right, we'll take a break. We'll have more in just a second here as we continue the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue with Chris Tanto Paranto and Sean Parnell. Now, look, I actually have another idea, and I want to run it by both of you. And I kid Chris Tanto Paranto a lot because he's like the little brother that I never had.
But last time we were together, too. You did win. You got me, dude.
I did. I mean, I'll choke your ass out, and you know it. Well, you know that I train like a maniac, but I mean,
I'm glad that you're on the other side of the desk.
Oh, you're full of crap. You could kick my ass. But the point is, here's the thing. We got to start building the technology so we don't have to send men and women door to door anymore. We got to stop.
Door-to-door fighting, military operations on urban terrain is...
We now have to fight with the best technology. We should never send boots on the ground in the situation like we did in Iraq ever again, or Afghanistan.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's true.
I know you need some, but you don't need...
No, look, I mean, we drove around in Afghanistan in regular Humvees, pickup truck Humvees, and we're getting ambushed by...
Were they up-armored?
No.
And we were getting ambushed by enemy elements that were three times our size riding around in the back of the trucks like we're the Beverly Hillbillies. And it wasn't until 6 or 7 months into the deployment where we finally got the equipment that we needed. But how many men and women were wounded waiting for that equipment?
I couldn't believe how long it took these Humvees to get up armored. I couldn't believe it.
All right,
here's the other thing. So if it's me, and I'll ask Sean this question. If me and Toronto, Tonto Peronto in a fight, who's going to win? Me, right?
Yes, Sean. Is it a war of words? Because it's a war. If it's a war of words, maybe.
No, I'm not.
But if it's a war of fisticuffs, I think you're done.
I don't think so. I've been training for 6 years. I'm now.
You better hope he doesn't have the ability to reach through that microphone and choke you.
I'll grab his carotid and I'll rip it out of his neck.
I'm just going to be quiet here and be that humble
quiet
guy.
You know what the best thing is? I'll just fill him. I've seen him.
Professional.
Listen, I've seen him out drinking.
As much as I enjoy all of this, I need you to say goodbye. So if we could do that, that'd be great.
Right.
Thank
Sean,
you.
It's great to see you, but I'm not.
That's who I'm not going to mess with right there.
That's right, Tonto.
Yep.
All right. I kind of like Tonto, but I really like Sean. I'm just saying.
It's the same name because you have the same name
and we spell it the same way.
Right, the right way. All right. Love you both. Thank you. And thanks for what you did back, what was it now? 6 years ago. Unbelievable. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue. Glad you're with us. Joining us now is Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch. He is the president of Judicial Watch. Welcome back to the program, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, Sean. How are you today?
I'm good. So now we know in the latest struck page messages back and forth that there was coordination between the DOJ and the FBI to actually have a media leak strategy with an ongoing investigation with evidence that was never proven, on top of course, using the phony Steele dossier to get the FISA warrants and everything in between. This is about as corrupt as anything I've ever seen and the biggest abuse of power in our history. And the question is, where do we go from here?
In a just world, the Mueller investigation would end or at least pause. I mean, just think, if this is a regular criminal investigation at the state level and you had the cops, you know, Strzok and company, engaged in such outrageous misconduct, abusing their authority, going after someone because of political bias, the prosecution would stop. The courts would step in and stop it. And I think, frankly, our friends in Congress, Sean, need to spend less time talking about Strzok, Page, Comey, and the rest, and more time talking about what Mr. Mueller is doing based on all of the crooked activities by that gang.
Well, we now know, but wait a minute, but it's all tied together.
But for their corruption.
Listen, it's all true, but we've got to build out the story, and each piece puts the puzzle together. We have now framed in that puzzle, and now we're just filling in the final pieces of the puzzle. But what we know is breathtaking, and that is you had a group of people, and we have an insurance policy group. You had Strzok, you had Page, you had Comey, you had McCabe, and other people, then Bruce Ohr and Sally Yates and Christopher Steele. But two of the people were involved in exonerating Hillary when we know she committed felonies to keep their favored candidate in the race. Hillary Clinton funnels money, which I would argue is a campaign finance violation, through a law firm to Fusion GPS Glenn Simpson. And then he hires Christopher Steele. What is the one thing all of these people have in common? Strzok and Page and Orr, Nellie Orr works for Fusion GPS, Glenn Simpson, Christopher Steele. They all hate Donald Trump. They never wanted him to be president. Now, then you get this dossier that's put together, which eventually we discover that Christopher Steele doesn't even believe himself. That becomes the basis for a FISA warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate. And then, of course, they never verified, they never corroborate. All of these things happen, and they're telling us it's true. Now, we might get that information sooner rather than later, and I hope we do. And then we find out that Orr stays in touch with Christopher Steele, who's fired for lying and leaking, and that they're talking about firewalls so they don't get caught. They're afraid they're going to get exposed. And I think the single most dangerous piece of information we now have is that Steele was funneling his lies through the FBI into the hands of Mueller's team vis-a-vis Andrew Weissmann. And he's asking Orr about, well, you know, did you get my information to the SC, the special counsel?
Well, you may not have noticed, but last week, Judicial Watch obtained new documents from the FBI. They were trying, it looks like, to rehabilitate Steele, but they found that they couldn't really believe in the dossier. And this is prior, this is subsequent to other documents we found. And this is a quote from the documents. The FBI said Steele was deemed not suitable as a confidential human source, and he was not to collect intelligence on behalf or for the FBI. So this is the FBI's own documents showing that Steele was to be kept away from, and they, as you point out, corruptly continued to use him anyway. One intermediate step that can be done is the Office of Special Counsel, which is charged with making sure that federal officials don't abuse their offices to advance a political agenda, like under the Hatch Act, for instance, which prohibits political activities by federal employees in most circumstances, can conduct a criminal or serious investigation into what Strzok was up to. He clearly had anti-Trump bias. He clearly was using FBI resources to advance that bias, to stop Trump, as he says, and have an insurance policy. The Office of Special Counsel, which is not in the Justice Department, can conduct an independent criminal investigation. So that, I think that's one area that we can draw our attention to or draw attention to as an opportunity for more accountability for Strzok, because he has zero credibility. His lawyers are telling us, don't believe what you read in his emails and text messages. And obviously, that's not persuasive. Even the FBI had to let him go because it didn't become credible anymore. So we just got to keep the pressure on, Sean, here. And if I were, you know, and if they don't want to focus on Mueller, bring him in and ask him some questions. Why did you keep Strzok on? Why did you fire him?
Why is he keeping Andrew Weissman on?
Weissman, who's caught up in this in terms of potentially leaking information in the middle of the campaign to friendly media.
Oh, I think that's the worst part. Let me go through, because you put out a release yesterday on the letter that we know was sent to Rod Rosenstein by Congressman Mark Meadows. I mean, I think this is very revealing that the FBI agent Peter Strzok is contacting Lisa Page's girlfriend and discussing, their words, a media leak strategy. The text says specifically, I had literally just gone to find this phone to tell you that I want to talk about the media leak strategy with the DOJ before you go. The next day, the leak comes out in the Washington Post. Then the day after that, Strzok congratulates Page on a good job while referencing and referring to the two derogatory articles about Carter Page. In the text, Strzok is warning Page that two articles are coming out. One is worse than the other about Lisa's namesake, and added, well done, Page. So you have people in the FBI coordinating with the DOJ, and now we know that that Christopher Steele and the Department of Justice are coordinating with the special counsel. How can they investigate? How do you have Rod Rosenstein in there when Rod signed the fourth FISA warrant and appointed Mueller and is a witness as relates to the firing of Comey?
Right. And Strzok is he's not just your regular FBI agent. He was running the Russia investigation at an operational level for the FBI. He was traveling overseas. He was running the Clinton investigation concurrently. We just had documents come out showing that Strzok drafted the initial letter that Comey sent to Congress reopening the Clinton email issue with the Wiener laptop fight. Now we just sued for all the Wiener stuff because it looks like Strzok didn't want to look at all of that. According to the IG, that investigation against Clinton was curtailed perhaps because the IG admits, I think it's more direct, of the bias that Strzok had against President Trump. He didn't want the Wiener laptop find, that all the Clinton emails were on Wiener's laptop, which is outrageous now that we know the 18 classified emails were on that system, getting away with his Get Trump Russia operation.
Let me bring Sarah Carter in. Sarah
pointed that out, not us. The IG did.
Sarah Carter, and I'm told that there, I just read the two text messages that you broke yesterday, but now we've got more text messages that you have that are going to be coming out tonight, and these two go even deeper. Can you give us a preview of what you're going to tell us?
Well, I can give you a few hints. I mean, it does go deeper. I think we're going to see a lot more with regard to higher-level officials, Sean, at the FBI, involved with Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and coordinating with the DOJ. I think this is very significant because, once again, everything that they have been attempting to say to Congress or keeping from Congress, now they're getting caught. So they're basically getting caught with their foot in their own mouth. This is something that Peter Strzok's attorney tried to mitigate. This was about how to prevent leaks, not about leaks. But there's just too much information here. There's not even circumstantial evidence. It's very solid evidence.
Well, not only that, in the text messages that I understand are coming out today, they actually talk about the name of the reporters involved in this.
Absolutely.
And Strzok's boss is mentioned in all of this, and meaning that he knew about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, so we know now that McCabe was well aware of what was going on. We understand now that Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were actively speaking with Bruce Ohr, who was a back channel for Christopher Steele. And Tom Fitton put it so perfectly when he was saying that, you know, it's, look, we have documents that show, documents from the FBI themselves. This is not conspiracy theory. This is the truth. Documents that say Christopher Steele should no longer be used as a source. He's not trustworthy. I can tell you this. Months ago, I spoke to intelligence officials who worked with Christopher Steele directly while he was still a part of MI6. And they didn't have great things to say about Christopher Steele. They didn't use the spin. They thought he was a blowhard. They didn't believe half of what he was saying half the time. And let me tell you this, Christopher Steele got most of his information from Russians. So this is what I'm having a really difficult time understanding. We have the left and a lot of people that are anti-Trumpers or never Trumpers saying, oh, we shouldn't believe this. They colluded with the Russians. And even though there's no evidence there whatsoever that they colluded with Russians, but they're willing to believe Russian lies, basically Russian lies delivered by a foreign intelligence. And now we have people within the FBI at the senior level and the DOJ in text messages. This isn't stuff that we're making up. This isn't a dossier that was put together by some right-wing Trump supporter. This is their own words, actually exposing these people for who they are and for what they were doing and how they were subverting the United States Constitution, the laws that garner this land. They were actually subverting it. Malfeasance within these departments that we trust, that we give all our trust to. I mean, this is September 11th.
Let me go back.
The day that we remember all those people. And here we have people at the highest levels in these agencies that are playing these games, not the foot soldiers, not the people that are down on the ground fighting, but the people at the top.
All right, as we take a break here, we'll come back with Sarah Carter and with Tom Fitton. All right, as we continue, Tom Fitton, Sarah Carter, remain 800-941. Sean, your call's at the bottom of this half hour. Let me go to your discovery, Freedom of Information Act and Judicial Watch. If Anthony Weiner's laptop contained hundreds of thousands of emails, do we know if any of them had any Hillary emails in there, Uma Abedin emails in there? And when do we get a hold of those emails?
Well, they've given us all the State Department received from the FBI the emails that were State Department documents, supposedly, potentially responsive, and they gave us many hundreds of records, including at least 18 classified documents that were from the Clinton email server present on Anthony Weiner's laptop. The classified material included the identity of a CIA operative. So pretty sensitive classified material. And if anyone else had classified material or set up a system that allowed classified material not only to be accessible to the public essentially on your own server because it was so insecure, but then was placed on other systems like Anthony Weiner's laptop, you would have been arrested. Hillary Clinton would have been arrested. Uma Abedin would have been arrested if the rule of law was being fairly applied.
Did we ever find the 33,000 emails that she deleted and acid washed off with bleach bit and had busted up in, you know, on devices? Did we ever get all of those? What percentage, if any, did we get?
Well, we're still unclear as to what percentage is there, but we've been getting them in dribs and drabs from the government. We should be getting the last batch soon. And these are the emails that were either deleted or Mrs. Clinton did not want to
turn over. Do they have all 33,000 emails that were deleted?
We don't know, but we do know there was classified information on the emails that she deleted or hid from the American
people. Well, even James Comey admitted that on July 5th.
Stuff.
So I guess
where's this Justice Department, Sean?
I don't know.
Comey and Lynch.
I don't have an answer
for them
to
protect her, but why are they protecting her? Ray and Sessions, unbelievable.
Sarah, you want to take a stab at that? Because I don't know the answer to it.
I don't think anyone knows the answer to it. What we do know, Sean, is that Attorney General Jeff Sessions is missing. inaction. We don't know what John Huber is doing, because obviously we found out now that he's never interviewed Bruce Ohr, who is a significant player in all of this. We have Rod Rosenstein, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who's somehow in charge of this special counsel investigation, even though he is directly involved in this. He signed the fourth FISA warrant on Carter Page and should have known what was the problems and the compromises made there and the malfeasance. So basically, we have no one checking on the investigators. And
sorry, you're there, or we'd lose you. All right, we'll go back to Tom Fitton. We'll give you the last word, Tom.
Well, the immediate steps that can be taken now, Sean, declassification. Declassify the rest of the FISA warrant. We have these OR documents to be declassified, because right now the FBI and Justice Department are stonewalling the release of information. And the president can, I think, insert himself, require more timely release, and declassify material that's not being classified for national security reasons.
But we know what we need. We need the 302s between Bruce Ohr and Christopher Steele. We need the unredacted FISA memos, specific pages, I'm told, 10 through 12, 17 through 34. If we're going to be thorough, we would get all of the Gang of Eight material, as I understand, which would be available to everybody. A specific classified email chain from October 14th between the FBI and the DOJ, and every other request, and, you know, everybody else that's involved in this.
And, you know, and there are other things that haven't been turned over to the public through FOIA as well. The Justice Department and the FBI have said that text messages generated by Andrew McCabe aren't covered by FOIA. They won't even look at them. So there's a lot of stuff here. I would appoint a transparency czar maybe to run the to oversee Justice Department and FBI responses, because it's like the fox guarding the hen house. They can't be trusted to provide documents in a timely way or at all on issues that the as an agency or individually they have worries about, because it would evidence corruption.
We got to let you go. Tom Fitton, thank you for being with us. Sarah Carter, thank you for being with us. 800-941-SEAN. Toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll get to your calls when we come back straight ahead. All right, let's go back. And, yes, it was how long ago? It was, what, 6 years ago, Benghazi, and 17 years ago today, Michael W. Smith, There She Stands. He was actually asked to write that song by then-President George W. Bush, and we've inserted our sound, and then we'll play President Trump from earlier today, and we'll get to your calls. Listen to this song. Everyone's asking to play it again.
This just into our newsroom, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center.
When the night
Apparently that was another plane.
Seems to say.
An airplane has crashed into the World Trade Center.
All is lost.
There appears to be a gaping hole.
Gone away.
Oh, there it goes, there it goes, there it goes, there it goes.
But I know.
The whole side has collapsed.
The whole building has collapsed.
Not alone.
Tower 2 has had a major explosion and a complete collapse.
By the light.
The roof has collapsed in one of the towers.
She stands.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
There she waits.
We're not going to be cowered by it, that we're not afraid.
Faithful friend.
The freedom-loving nations of the world stand by our side.
Shimmering stars.
Proud to have the red, white, and blue.
Westward wind.
This country will not relent.
Show the way.
Proud to be a part of this country.
Carry me.
I think about the families, the children.
To the place.
Freedom itself was attacked, and freedom will be defended.
She stands.
Forget the 2,800 people.
Clear blue sky.
Please
guns and fire not only were heroes at the beginning, but they're still heroes. Reminds
us with rain. We're going to come out of this emotionally stronger. Those
that die. And the commitment of our fathers is now the calling of our time. Wise to
wise. I don't think anybody should forget the visuals of that day. By
the brain. Those guys did more than anyone ever expected of them. In
this dream. They messed with the wrong city. They messed with the wrong state. She
stands. And I just don't want people to forget. When evil
calls itself a modern. They all had a sense of duty to protect us all.
Steadfast in our determination. Someone will
pull us from the rubble. The rest of the country now understand who the true defenders are.
May the Irish hills caress you. May her lakes and rivers bless you. We see the flying
sword and tatter. May the luck of the Irish enfold you. We've seen her stand
the test of time. May the blessings of St. Patrick behold you.
God bless Ireland, and God bless the United States of America.
She stands.
Now America's embracing a new ethic and a new creed. Let's roll. By
the dawn. The phrase New York's finest and New York's bravest means something now, doesn't it?
This is a time to reflect and be thankful for where we are today. And through
the fire. We will rebuild New York City.
She stands.
Yet after America was attacked, it was as if our entire country looked into a mirror and saw our better selves.
At this memorial on this sacred earth, in the field beyond this wall, and in the skies above our heads, we remember the moment when America fought back. We're also joined by members of the National Park Service, along with firefighters, first responders, and incredible people from law enforcement. These are truly great people. Some of you here today answered the call and raced to this field 17 years ago. You fill our hearts with pride, and I want to thank you. On behalf of our country, thank you very much. Most importantly, to the family members of Flight 93, today all of America wraps up and joins together. We close our arms to help you shoulder your pain and to carry your great, great sorrow. Your tears are not shed alone, for they are shared grief with an entire nation. We grieve together for every mother and father, sister and brother, son and daughter, who was stolen from us at the Twin Towers, the Pentagon, and here in this Pennsylvania field. We honor their sacrifice by pledging to never flinch in the face of evil and to do whatever it takes to keep America safe. 17 years ago, your loved ones were among the 40 of Flight 93, the 40 passengers and crew members on board the 8 a.m. United Airlines flight from Newark to San Francisco. They were men and women from every background. They were young people returning from visiting family, moms and dads on business trips, and friends going and coming from birthdays and weddings. They boarded the plane as strangers, and they entered eternity, linked forever, as true heroes.
That was Michael W. Smith. There She Stands, and the president from his remarks earlier today. We have Fran is in Butler, Pennsylvania. Fran, hi, how are you? Glad you called.
Thanks, Sean. It's great to be here today. And thanks so much for keeping this memory alive for all these 9/11 families, both 01 and those that did what they did in Benghazi. It's really great that you're doing what you're doing today. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to do it. We appreciate it.
Well, my my story is one with my first cousin Joe Angelini Sr. He was with Rescue One, and his son was Joe Angelini Jr. And they're still to this day the only father and son team that ever gave their lives up on the same fire in New York City. So they're well remembered and respected, and their names are one over the other on the South Tower wall right in front of the survivor tree.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you something. So you're the cousin of a father and a son, and they were killed on 9/11. Do you know what happened exactly?
Yeah, well, Joe Sr., who was always razzed because they always said, you know, he missed the big ones. He always missed the big. He missed the first nine or the first Twin Towers attack in 92, and he was on the street in front of the North Tower. And, in fact, they rescued him, and his funeral was on 9/21 in Lindenhurst. So he had the first funeral in Long Island. So that was quite a thing to be in that limousine and seeing all the people on both sides of the street. That was their first opportunity, you know, to grieve.
I remember all of it. I remember that, you know, Rudy Giuliani tried to get to every single solitary funeral. And, you know,
he did. And I saw him at the convention and I thanked him for being at both funerals. And he said, you know, I remember that church. And it dawned on me that he was at so many churches. And he said, I remember that church. And, and he spent the whole funeral there, 3 hours each one.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something. It was devastating for these families. I know these families still today, and they haven't gotten over it. And that's why, you know, on days like today, a day like today, you know, it's very hard on them because they know what happened. And there was such a shock to our system and our soul. We weren't prepared. They were at war. We weren't at war with them. And you know what? We can never get back on that footing. We've got to understand that evil exists, the enemy exists, and that they want to destroy who we are, and they hate who we are. And it's a hard thing for good people to wrap their arms around sometimes, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah, we lost our innocence in a lot of ways that day.
You're right. A lot of ways. You're right. All right,
well,
my friend. Thank you. We appreciate you being with us, and our thoughts and prayers go out to them and so many others. Cheryl is in North Carolina. I hope you're hunkered down there. Are you near the coast, Cheryl?
No, I'm actually about 4 hours from the coast. I'm kind of in the middle of North Carolina, right in the Piedmont.
Okay. Well, you're still probably going to have some high winds, a lot of rain, and it's not going to be that fun. It looks like it's going to hit Thursday right around Hannity time on TV. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, they said during the night Thursday or Friday is when we're going to get it. Of course, there's no water on the ships to be had.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you something. It is I'm hearing from everybody that knows, including my buddy Joe Bastardi, the official meteorologist of the Sean Hannity Show. This is the real deal. This is not a test. This is a real emergency for a lot of people. From everything I hear, people are heeding the warning. They're getting out. You know, take whatever you need to take with you. Take your animals, take your important papers, take your valuables, those that you can, take memories with you, pictures. Pack up your truck, pack up your van, pack up your SUV, whatever you got, your car, doesn't matter. And just be careful. Get out of harm's way. And everybody understands, and we'll be here as a country, you know, to come in behind you and help and donate like all Americans always do.
Yes, they do. I appreciate everything you do and for telling the truth. But my comment is, I was listening to a clip of Obama's speech, and if the country is in such bad shape and Trump is doing such a terrible job, why is Obama trying to take credit for it?
Because he's jealous. And I think Obama is incapable of recognizing that he himself and the rigid ideology that he bought into his whole life failed. I think Obama's a true leftist believer. Everything in his background shows that he believed everything I think he said. You know, community organizer, Acorn, Reverend Wright, everything, the Black Liberation Theology, Ayers and Dorn, I think there is a radical side of this guy.
And he's just contradicting the Democratic Party. They're talking about how bad it is, but he's really admitting how good it is and wanting the glory for it.
Well, of course he wants the glory, and he resents the hell out of it that the economy came back after he left office. He's literally saying, no, I did that. He tells all of us that you didn't build that, but he built the good economy after he left.
Right, right. It's disgusting.
It is pretty bad. All right, listen, stay safe. Everybody in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, we're praying for y'all, all right? Hang in there. And we'll be there. I know the American people. They'll be there. And whatever you need, food, water, medicine, supplies, baby formula, cots, blankets, you know, we'll do whatever we can do to help. It doesn't make it fun. It doesn't make it easy. I've met many, many people over the years that have had their entire homes destroyed. It is really, really, you know, it's a hard thing to go through. But you come out of it with your life first, and then we'll worry about replacing the material things after. Mike in Detroit. Mike, hi. How are you?
Hello, Sean. It's good to speak with you. I'm a longtime listener. I love your Fox show. I'm going to try to be real quick because I got a couple of quick questions. All right. Trump has got so many people in his corner ready to fight. Anything he can turn over or declassify, I can't understand why he wouldn't do it. What's he waiting for? One of his kids to get indicted or something? And if they do get a special counsel to look into the investigators, can it be stopped by the Democrats if they take the House and or Senate? And something else I thought about, if they're for the investigation, the special counsel to begin with, there was supposed to be a crime designated. If there's no crime designated, then can't Trump put an end to it?
Yeah, I think
30 days. Name the crime or I'm putting an end to it. Put them on their heels.
Listen, I think all of that's going to happen. I think it's going to happen sooner than later. I don't think it's going to happen on a week where 9/11 happened. To me, there's other things that we are more important to talk about. And I don't think with a big, massive hurricane about to hit the east coast of the United States that looks like the real deal, that anybody's going to be focused on that. We've got to worry about our neighbors right now. We got to roll up our sleeves and be prepared to help out the people of South Carolina, North Carolina, and elsewhere. That's where our focus is. But afterwards, I would expect that he will do that. Right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. We've got new struck page text messages we'll be breaking. George Papadopoulos, he's got to go to jail for 14 days. Thank you, Robert Mueller. He and his wife will join us. Eric Trump, Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, also Jason Chaffetz, Ed Henry, and Sebastian Gorka. So EDVR Hannity, breaking news, new struck page text messages. We'll break it tonight at 9, Hannity on Fox, and we'll see you then. We're back here tomorrow.